I don't know what it is, and I don't care to know. I only saw that man who was in the trailer, and I said, no, thank you, sir. I said,
no, I will not buy what you're selling.
I do not want that man on my screen.
I said, no, sir. I will not sign your Greenpeace paper today.
Please leave me alone. I'm just trying to shop at Trader Joe's. Well, welcome back.
Yeah.
To us.
Welcome back to us. I thought you were saying that to me at first. I was like, yeah, thank you. I've been here. We're in the same
welcome
spot.
Back. Georgia, specifically.
Yeah, welcome back to Do We Still Dig This? I'm Georgia. I'm your host, Georgia. I'm your host, Georgia Gove.
And I'm Grace.
what are we talking about this week, Grace?
Oh boy, this one is a fun one. We were just off air just now discussing real life grief, and here we have one of the best examples of a grief story. Sweeney Todd. The yeah. Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah, the 2007 classic film directed by Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. Yep.
You know, original music by our friend Stephen Sondheim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I forgot when I first saw the opening credits. I was like, oh, yeah, right. It's Sondheim. Like, I knew it was a play, obviously.
Yeah.
I remembered all that. But I was like, oh, right. Okay. And apparently I was reading the IMDb trivia facts, and Sondheim, like, had fielded, like, a lot of offers to adapt it into a film. And apparently, like, Tim Burton was one of the only people that he even, like, considered after seeing his vision or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like, his style fits in with the style of Sweeney Todd so well. I mean, I can't imagine. Maybe Guillermo del Toro could have done, like, a similar job.
I would watch that.
You know,
that.
A similarly good job. Honestly, I would watch the shit out of that. I mean, I think there would be a lot of, like, cool puppetry and effects.
That would be very cool.
Other than Guillermo del Toro, I think Tim Burton is really the only choice
mm-hmm.
that could have been made for Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. a very bloody musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, like, one of the other facts was, like, how much Tim Burton, like, really wanted to showcase the bloodiness of it, because mm-hmm. in the different stage productions, they sort of would, like, cut back on the bloodiness, like, because, you know, whatever, audiences. But Tim Burton was like, no, we really need to get some blood in here.
Yeah, it's gory.
Funnily enough, not as gory as I remember. Like, it's definitely bloody, but I was like, oh, there's a lot of, like, really disgusting stuff, and it wasn't as bad as I remembered. So maybe that was just, like, me watching it as a teenager being like, ew. Yeah. Which I did super cringe at, like, the scene where she's, like, showing whatever the little kid's name is, she's, like, showing him how to grind the meat, and, like, I literally was like, oh. But that was more, like, just about grinding meat, because I don't,
yeah, that's more because you're a vegetarian.
I don't like meat. And every time I'm, like, watching a cooking show and they're like, here's how to make a sausage, I'm like, I gotta go, I have to
yeah, I have to leave the room, actually.
I don't like it.
I'm so unfazed. I'm just like, yeah, I want to get a meat grinder so that I can make my own sausages.
Oh, my God. Please don't say that to me.
I'll grind my own hamburger meat. I won't show it to you. I won't do it while you're in the room.
Okay.
Just like while we do a podcast. One time, like, grinding meat in the background.
Remember that time that you, like, made me eat a hot dog?
Okay, well, we're gonna cut that out of the podcast because that makes me sound bad.
You didn't make me eat it. You just, like,
taunted
me.
No, I shoved
me.
It in your mouth. I was an asshole.
You were like, yeah. You didn't. I didn't eat it, was the thing. Like, no. You were just like, hur, like putting it near my mouth. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to murder you in cold blood.
Yeah, and I would have deserved it. I was being a shitty kid.
And then, like, years later, you were like, I feel really bad about that. And I was like, the moment has passed.
Yeah, the moment to apologize about that. My, like, guilty ass conscience is just sitting here, like, stewing in it for several years.
Yeah. You apologize, like, years later. Yeah. So funny. But yeah, the bloody scenes were, like, you know, like, it is bloody, but, like, it's nothing that I, like, I feel like you, like, a kid, we were kids, we watched this. I feel like it's not anything super, super bad.
No, nothing worse than, like, a Tarantino movie, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, so this film stars Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, neither of who can sing. I didn't remember that part either. I was like, wow, they're both terrible.
Yeah, they lend a little, like, realism to the characters, but, yeah, they can't, like, really sing.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, they are the parts. Like, they really, like, you know, the casting is very good, but then, like, Sacha Baron Cohen sings, and whoever the girl is that plays Joanna, like, when she sings, it's just like a stark contrast of, like, the two of them being, like, not very, very good.
Yeah.
So that made me laugh. But apparently Helena Bonham Carter went through, like, extensive vocal training, and I was just like, oh, okay, well, it didn't really work, but no, she was fine. Thought she was fine.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. I'm finding out what the name of that.
Her name's, like, Jane something or something.
Jane something or something.
I looked it up last night because I was like, what else has she been in? And it's nothing. She hasn't been in anything else, really.
Jane Wisner.
Okay.
She has, like, huge eyes.
Yeah, she really has not been in a lot, because I did look up. I was like, she's pretty talented. I wonder what else she's been in. And then,
she was probably a Broadway person.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe she did. I did forget Alan Rickman was in this film.
Yeah.
Straight up forgot that he was in it.
He's great in it. And the guy who plays Wormtail, too.
Yeah, Peter Pettigrew is also in it. Of course, you know, it's a British production, so, like, you can't not have, like, five Harry Potter actors in it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, he is great. I love his... First of all, I love Alan Rickman's commitment to just playing the creepiest villains of all time. Mm-hmm. Just the creepiest, just the skeeviest. Loves it. Love that journey for him. And then Helena Bonham Carter... Her commitment to playing the most batshit insane women that you've ever seen on screen.
Yeah. Just absolutely nuts.
Her hair in this film, I was like, my God.
Truly amazing. I wanted my hair to do that when I was in high school, you know?
Why? It's like she looks like she it, like, got hit with a broom.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we got really obsessed with this movie. Did we watch it in theaters? I don't even remember.
I don't remember seeing it in theaters, but we both have a weird memory. So,
yeah.
We could have. I remember watching it a lot in our homes.
We watched it a lot. It was, like, excessive the amounts of time that I've seen that movie.
Yeah, which is funny because I didn't remember a lot of it. And I was like, we did watch this, like, an excessive number of times. This was also one of the things that I feel like we would put on and my mom would be like, no.
Yeah, she'd be like, let's watch something else. Yeah, I feel like we watched it a lot when we were at, like, my house.
Yeah. What was your, like, initial thoughts, like, rewatching this? Because I don't know, how long has it been since you've seen it?
Oh, it's been years. It's probably been over a decade since I've seen this. Same. You know?
Mm-hmm.
This one is, like, an interesting one because I feel like it was very much the vibe of 2007. You know what I mean? Like, and specifically my vibe, too. Where I was, like, I was in a kind of, like, darker place. Like, I was really into, you know, like, Tim Burton, like, macabre kind of stuff.
Yeah. Immediately watching this, I was like, oh, right. Hot Topic.
Yeah. It was very, like, Hot Topic-y. Like, it was, I was like, this was definitely a distinctive vibe for me.
Yeah.
But yeah. I like don't think it's my vibe anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I think my whole feeling on it is I think it ignited my love for Stephen Sondheim. I think it, you know, like I remembered I wanted to look, we had a masquerade, you know, theme for our prom, and I like chose a dress and wanted my hairstyle to look a little bit like Helena Bonham Carter in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
My hair doesn't do that, so it was kind of a failed attempt, but I, you know, I really wanted to have that vibe at this like masquerade.
Listen, I mean, yeah, like you said, this was 2007.
Yeah, like, this everything was about 2007.
The vibe, the like grim darkness of the sets and the costuming and everything, you know, just like the overall like bleakness of it and everything. I was like, wow, yeah, this really was like emo culture at this time was hopping. It was
popping.
Like it, I was like, this, I so remember. And like, what really struck me was like, for some reason, like Johnny Depp's costume, I was like, I remember people dressing this way.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you had like Panic at the Disco and all these like bands that kind of like went right along with that vibe and like played into that. So yeah definitely. I felt like almost the same way when I was watching this. I was like, oh yes, 2007.
Yeah, what a vibe, what a vibe. Yeah, that was how I felt, is that it's very dated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely feels dated. Like, yeah. It does not feel like a movie that would be made today. Like,
no, absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, like, brightness is, like, an aesthetic now. Like, everything has to be, it's either, well, it's, like, unless it's a fucking Marvel movie, which makes, or not Marvel movie, DC movie, I guess. It just, like, makes no sense to me. Because everything in, like, the DC universe now is so, like, bleak and dark. I mean, like, I saw the character design that's going to be, like, the Riddler in the next movie. And it's just, like, it's, like, a guy with, a bag on his head. And it's just, it's very, like, Seven. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing? This is stupid. I mean, the Riddler in, like, I don't know. But I also really like the 90s Batman cartoon. So,
yeah,
I don't like that aesthetic at all. Like, comic books are bright. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think superhero movies, especially DC, have been pretty critiqued for that recently.
Yeah, it's
like
super
Marvel
dumb.
Is like less because they, you know, they have like the Thor movie and stuff, like Birds of Prey. Yeah,
they've
was
still
good.
Retained brightness.
Yeah. They've retained that like comic bookiness. But yeah, I think they've been pretty criticized for that lately.
It's stupid. They're just trying to hop on the success of like The Dark Knight, which worked in those movies, but like, okay, that was an aesthetic, and now we can drop that aesthetic. Go to a new fucking color palette. Right.
No, I personally am very glad that we're done with the trend has gone more towards like brighter aesthetics, because watching this, I was like, yeah, there were like a lot of things that were like this at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just like, and it is a vibe and that's great. I'm just glad it's not the trend anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hokey. It's like it's a very dark movie. The palette is also very similar.
Yeah.
Helena Bonham Carter's dresses were incredible. Like,
yeah, they were pretty great.
Yeah, all the outfits I think are pretty great. I wonder if this, like, because Tim Burton was having a moment. So I wonder if, like, his aesthetic, like, affected the rest of, like, movie making, if that was, like, a. Because I don't know if he started the trend or he was. I mean, I guess he didn't really follow the trend because that is his aesthetic. But you know what I mean?
No, I think it was more that he, because he had had movies way before that and everything. I think he was just sort of lucky enough to like be making movies during a time when that aesthetic was like really on trend.
Yeah. And his aesthetic isn't always like that.
It's not.
You know, like his, like Big Fish is a very different kind of aesthetic to Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. And I think that he kind of saw his chance to be like, oh, this dark aesthetic, like people are really into it right now. Let's do it. Like, and I commend him for that for sure. Like, I really do, because this movie commits. There's no break from it. You know, we have the little flashbacks to the the mom and like when they were normal and whatever. And then we have Sacha Baron Cohen, like his character is a little bit of a break in it. But like pretty much for the rest of the time, it's just this extremely bleak. Everybody's wearing brown, black, white, gray. Red is in there, like reds, maroons.
Yeah, know. There's like touches. There's like hints of red, especially around like Mrs. Lovett's costuming. She's got like hints of red in there.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I think too that like the fake blood that they used is like extremely red to kind of like stand out among yeah. the very black and white tones of it.
Yeah, and that's another thing, like when we're talking earlier about the goriness of it, I think, and I wrote this down, I was like, I think that the that it is, I mean, because it is pretty gory, like he's slitting people's throats left and right, and just like he beats Sacha Baron Cohen's character to death with a kettle, like yeah. it's pretty bloody.
Yeah,
but the blood is so bright and fake looking that it is kind of like, it's not as, it's jarring, but it's not as jarring as if it looked like real blood.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there was, I forget what scene it was. I think it was when he killed Alan Rickman. Because he yells, Benjamin Baca, and then he stabs him. And I like laughed out loud. I was like, this is funny. Like, he just really, like, really jams it into his neck and the blood is, like spurting out of there. Yeah, so I agree with you. I mean, I also think that there was a certain part of this that was meant for that teen audience that was really into this aesthetic at the time. So they may have been, like, for as bloody and gory as it is, they may have also been cautious of that and been like, oh, you know what? Like, 12-year-olds are going to come see this because they love this right now. So like, we're not going to go super, super realistic.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also part of Tim Burton in that, like the scene where they're like at the beach and she's singing by the sea, like that's obviously all like CGI'd and soundstaged. And there's this whole like fake tree going on. And so I was like, it does have this like otherworldly, like element to it that I think Tim Burton brought. So the fact that all the deaths and all the blood are like super fake doesn't necessarily bother me on like a quality level of the movie. Like I'm, you know what I mean? Like I'm not like, oh, this is so cringy. This is so fake. I think it really goes along with the overall aesthetic of like how Tim Burton crafted the whole thing because he does have this. I mean, you know, didn't he do Alice in Wonderland like right after this? Like that was just like.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty soon after. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like the story, everything about Sweeney Todd is very campy. I mean, it's a musical, which automatically makes it a little bit more campy and aesthetic. And it should be. I hate when like people try to do musicals that are too, like they're trying to do like a kitchen sink musical. I'm like, why for what reason? The whole point of a musical is that it's like camp as fuck, you know, that it's like over the top. That's the whole point of otherwise. I mean, like, I'm just like not generally a fan.
No. And you can do blends of different genres in musicals, but like, yeah, you're definitely kidding yourself. You know, you're still in a musical, buddy.
Yeah, this is a musical. People are bursting into song and dancing. Like, it's, you can't avoid the campiness of it. And I think, like, this movie really leans hard into how camp this musical is. And it's, like, it's a revenge fantasy. There's a lot of, like, campiness about it.
They could have, like, very easily said, no, we're not gonna lean into the campiness of this, and yet they did. Like, they could have very easily been like, oh, we're gonna take this really seriously, we're gonna like, because of the grim dark aesthetic, like
we're gonna make it grim and dark.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they definitely leaned into it, and that's also like a part of this that I really appreciate. Like, there were moments that I I don't know, maybe like watching it like as a older person, I was like more appreciating a lot of the humor that went mm-hmm. into it. Not that I didn't think it was funny when we watched it as kids, but like just like the whole scene where they decide they're going to start baking people into pies and like that whole musical number and the fact that they're like everybody out on the street is just like having a normal ass day, like walking along, and they're just in there like, ha ha ha, yes, we're going to do this. Looking out the window,
and I'm like, "You, and this is how you'll taste." Yeah, I guess we should have like a little bit of a plot overview for people who don't, who might not be as familiar with, who weren't like a macabre kid, you know, back in 2007.
Sure. Again, halfway through the podcast, let's explain what we're talking.
Let's explain it. So Sweeney Todd, the whole thing is that Sweeney Todd is an escaped prisoner who was wrongfully accused and convicted because this evil judge wanted to
fuck his wife.
And so he escaped, and 20 years later he's back and he's out for revenge. And he goes back to where he used to live, and Mrs. Lovett is running a meat pie emporium with very bad meat pies because meat is very expensive in London right now.
Okay, first of all, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions. I don't know what year is this supposed to, like, what era are we?
It's like the 1800s.
Okay.
Like, it's Victorian times for sure.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of what I thought, but it was, I don't know. There were, like, hints of other things. Yeah, I don't know
if they ever say. That's a good question.
No, they don't. I don't think they ever really say. And I also think that it's, like, purposefully, like, parts of it are purposefully anachronistic.
Yeah.
Because we are, again, sort of living in this, like, more fantasy world where you can just get away with, well, you might have just been able to get away with murder like that. But yeah, he was sailing around the world.
Well, he escaped and from a, like, you know, like he was a, you know, either on a prison boat or like working hard labor somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, in the empire. It's 1846 is year it is.
There we go. We've got a year.
It's 1846. Year. I knew it was like, you know, around that time. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of like Jean Valjean Jean Valjean from
Les Mis
sort of a thing where he was like a prisoner probably in Australia or whatever and escaped. And he was found floating in the ocean by Antony, who is the love interest of Joanna.
Yes. I have a lot of questions about Antony.
Me too, man. What's his deal?
What is his deal, literally? I was like, what is he doing there? Why is he going to London? I mean, he's obviously from London, but he, like, it doesn't seem like he's in London for any reason. He's just kind of hanging around, like, reading a book, and then he sees Joanna and he's like, well, that's it now. I gotta get her.
Yeah, he was looking for like Hyde Park or something and he spotted her.
I have a lot of questions.
I mean, he's a sailor. Yes. So he's on leave from his ship, I guess. But I don't know.
Oh, so he's just like hanging out.
Yeah. So what I would imagine is that like he's on leave from his ship that he's been sailing, you know, like taking his leave, and then he's going to be sailing again soon, I guess is his plan. I don't know.
Okay. But no, that actually makes sense. And I also one of my other questions was like, what is his and Sweeney Todd's relationship? But you answered that for me. Like, I thought they were just like buddies from like going around the world together. But yeah, okay, that makes sense that he was the one that found him.
Antony saved his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one that found him.
I also did not know what that character's name was. I thought it was Jamie for like the entire movie, but that's the actor's name.
Yeah, that's the actor's name.
I was low-key obsessed with him when I was a teen.
Very, very ambiguous.
Androgynous?
As a character. Yeah, androgynous as a character.
Can we talk about the fact that that was a lesbian love story?
For sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely a lesbian love story.
This is about two women.
Yeah.
Like, hello? Like,
oh my God. Yeah. So anyway, so Sweeney Todd comes back and he finds out that Mrs. Lovett tells him that his wife drank poison.
Yes.
And is gone.
Yes.
And that Joanna has been, is it the ward under the protection of Judge Turpin, who like sent him away, played yes. by Alan Rickman. And so he's planning his revenge. He wants to slit the judge's throat.
Yeah. Through his use of barber's tools.
Mm-hmm. Through his use of barbary. His like fancy little barbary knives. Anyway, twists and turns. Antony finds Joanna. They fall in love. There's a whole back and forth. But basically, he kills a lot of people because
is there a back and forth?
There's kind of a back and forth. I mean, like,
well, she throws in that key.
He throws in that key, and then their plot is discovered, and then Joanna gets sent away to a mental institution. As punishment, and so they have to break.
I just meant like he kind of like straight up falls in love with her, and she's just like,
I didn't mean there's back and forth between Antony and Joanna. There's no back and forth. There's literally just he sees her in a window and is like, I'm gonna steal her.
Yeah, which is, I was like, these are, I don't like these lyrics.
No, his song is literally, I feel you, Joanna. I feel you. It's like,
It's we're half an hour in. I was like, how long is it going to take for Georgia to sing one of the songs? And the answer was 30 minutes.
30 minutes. 30 minutes. You know, you knew that you can keep me away from it for very long, but.
No, I was like.
I really contained myself.
I'm really happy that you did. No, you have a beautiful voice. Here's another question I had. Is it implied that they get away in the end? Because we never go back to them.
I think, yes. I think that they, I don't know. There has to be a bright spot somewhere in this movie, maybe in this musical. And I would actually be interested. I've never seen the musical.
Yeah, me neither.
Version of this.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested in seeing, like, the actual musical version to see what, because they, you know, like, they have to change things and adapt mm-hmm. them from the,
yeah.
There's a lot less group numbers, you know, in this version of the play,
yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah. But, but like, I would love to see how it actually ends in the stage version, because yeah, I mean, like,
it's very Sondheim abrupt.
Isn't one for pulling punches, but also there has to be like some sort of, in the midst of all this death, there has to be like somebody that gets away. Although like Joanna is going to be like, this woman is like deeply traumatized.
Yes. But she says that. She says that to him because he's like, we're going to get out of here and like everything's gonna be fine. And she's like, it's literally not.
Yeah, like, literally, she was like, the ghosts never go away.
Yeah,
like,
she fucking much. Says that. She says
she's like, had a hard fucking life. Like,
I was like, this is the clincher of the whole movie right here. She says, or the whole story, just she's like, the ghosts never go away. I was like, she's fucking right.
Well, and then she sees some, her, who she doesn't know is her father, like, murder two people.
Yeah.
One of which is her, the guy who, like, held her captive.
Yep.
Basically,
which has to feel cathartic.
Perving on her.
Yeah, yeah, which has to feel cathartic in a certain sense. Like, I was thinking about that.
In a certain sense. But he does, like, let her go. You know what I mean? Like, he's about to kill her because she's dressed as a man. She knows that she's seen him kill a couple people. And so, mm-hmm. like, he's, like, gonna kill her. And then he hears Mrs. Lovett scream, and he's like, forget my face. Yep. Which, bad move if you're a murderer, for sure. You know what I mean? I'm just like, you're just gonna let this woman go? Anyway, she's deeply traumatized, and Antony is just like, spring chicken in here. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot in there, too, about, like, this, like, spring chicken of a man falling for this, like, deeply traumatized woman. I feel like I see that happen in real life a lot, where, like, these, like, sweet boys are just like... You know, they're, like, dating this person. They're like, I don't know why it's not working. And I'm like, yeah, she's had some shit happen in her life. And you cannot relate.
Bopping around. Like, yeah. Yeah, true, true, true. I wonder if they made it. I wonder if they, you know, have
no,
a future together.
She needs therapy in a way that did not happen in 1846.
Yeah, true. I was looking at it at the end because it does end very abruptly. And I didn't remember that. Like, it just ends like with him dying and you're like, okay, yeah. Great. You know, Toby kills him, which is you know.
Yeah. Apropos, I wonder when Jack the Ripper started, because that was, I was like, Toby for sure becomes Jack the Ripper, you know?
Poor Toby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There's a sequel about Jack the Ripper, but it's Toby. And it's a musical. Oh,
he was born in 1888, so.
Okay, well.
Still. Wait. How do we know when he was born? There's no way that he was born in 1888. When was his first victim? Hold on. I'm sorry.
Let's pause so Georgia can look up facts about Jack the Ripper.
11, okay. 11 separate murders stretching from April 1888 to February 1891. Okay. So, like, Toby could have... Toby could have been Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper.
Yeah. Okay, glad like we in settled. His 40s. Glad we settled that.
I was just like born. We don't know who he is. I don't know when Jack the Ripper was born.
They probably mean born as in like
hit, yeah, his first victim.
The legacy of him,
yeah,
was born.
Yeah, the legacy of Jack the Ripper is born. Yeah. But I was just like, we don't know who this man is.
there are guesses. Mm-hmm. I think people have. But I was looking at it, like, when it ended, like, so suddenly, and then all of a sudden, like, the credits were rolling, and I was like, okay, so wait.
so wait a minute.
Well, I was thinking about it in terms of, like, what are the, like, morals here? Like, what are we saying about the people who died and the people who lived? Like, if we're assuming that Anthony and Joanna got away, and Toby also gets away, basically. I mean, he has to kill somebody, but he also gets away. I was like, so they're the innocents, and everybody else was implicated somehow. I mean, I guess except for his victims, but like...
Yeah, but they're not really characters in the story. They're no, more like props.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I was just like thinking about like who dies and who doesn't, and just sort of like what the sort of all... morality lesson, not even lesson, but just like the morals of it, and like what we were saying, where the line was drawn here, because the wife dies and she's technically an innocent, although that was more
they take pains to mention that she's virtuous more than
there's a lot of talking about how women
she
are
keeps
virtuous.
Her legs closed, y'all, except for her legal husband. but she was violated by the
judge.
It's heavily implied that she was raped by the judge, which drove her to insanity.
Yeah.
So she's not virtuous anymore.
I guess.
By the rules of this play.
Only the virgins get away. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's not think about that too hard.
No, I'm just kidding. Poor Toby. A baby.
He's 5 years old.
Yeah. He's like 11, probably.
He does.
That kid did a great job.
Yeah, he's very talented. I also thought that he's very talented.
Yeah,
he's like out singing Helena Bonham Carter.
Mm-hmm. Well, not hard. She did her best. She put a lot of spirit into it, I have to say.
No, she, like I said, I think for both of them, like both of the mains, like even though they're not the best singers, they're enough of their characters and spirit that they get away with it. It's, you know, it's feasible. It's definitely feasible.
Yeah. Sondheim is also notoriously hard to sing because melodies will change halfway through.
Mm.
Meters will change.
Mm.
Like in Into the Woods, the witch, when she's like beans, nothing but beans, you know, like that whole thing is like, basically there's a lot of like his songs where like, it's a lot of phrasing that where you have to sing it all in one breath.
Right.
There's no way around it. Like you can't take a catch breath in there even. Yeah. So like it takes a lot of like breath support and it's notoriously difficult. It's his musicals are notoriously challenging. Mm. Beautiful. Yeah. Amazing. Challenging.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, like definitely like the music is so good. And there are moments that are stagey, but they work on screen. Again, like, I guess if we're talking about does this hold up, like, the aesthetics of it, no. But the direction and the translation of the musical itself, like, absolutely. Like, it is very enjoyable to watch. The, you know, the choreography and, like, everything. And they obviously, like you said, like, there's no big musical numbers. They obviously, like, toned certain things down from the stage play, like from the Broadway version. But like the way that it translates on screen, like, is just so enjoyable to watch. Yeah. They did so much to like make up for it.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say that too. Like, yeah, there's aspects of it that do and don't. Yeah, definitely the aesthetic is not something that like is that translates to 2021. Like that whole like emo aesthetic is just like not in vogue anymore in a big way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that it's ever coming back. Like,
I don't know.
The 90s are like making a comeback, but
90s are different though. Well, I guess, are you saying like the next step is then emo culture?
Yeah. I mean, like in 10 years, are there going to be like, are we going to see like teenagers running around with like seen hair?
Yeah.
There's like raccoon.
I feel like we are.
Striped hair. I know, it's gonna be very funny. Oh my God. It was a mistake the first time.
It's going to be so funny.
It's going to be so bad. I mean, oh gosh.
But like, think about when we were in like middle school and like we were like, haha, the 80s, like neon shoulder pads, like da 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 da. Like, that's what it's going to be in like 5 to 10 years. It's going to be like the imitation of what emo culture was. It's going to be very, very funny.
Oh, I forgot to mention this in the description too, but they end up baking Sweeney Todd's victims into pies to hide the bodies. So they're like feeding human meat.
Yeah. That is kind of the crux of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he kills people and then like they bake them into pies. Like that's kind of the whole movie.
Yes. And then she bakes them into pies and this is their whole scheme. Apparently people are really tasty because her shop is popping after.
Tastes like pork?
Apparently. Does it actually, is that a real fact or is that a lie from the movie?
I've heard that somewhere. Who knows if it's true? I haven't tasted human meat, so so like, I have no idea.
Speaking from experience.
Speaking from experience, it tastes like pork.
I went to a really weird restaurant once. What if I admitted to that
on a podcast? Just like, yeah, just casual.
Yeah, that time that I ate human.
But apparently, I mean, like, our body makeup is pretty similar to cows, or not cows, to pigs. So, I mean, it reasonably follows that we probably taste pretty similar.
I
see.
Okay, yes. I think I have heard that now that you're saying that part. That makes sense. Well, I definitely don't want to know, but yes, that is the...
Yeah, I'm okay with never finding out for sure.
The part of this movie, what this movie posits, is that if we were baked into pies, we would be fucking delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, overall, does it hold up? Like, no, but, like, that's not to say I didn't really enjoy watching it, you know? Like, I don't think in general this movie has gone down as a classic, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. There really is nothing. This isn't a timeless classic for sure.
No.
We can say that. It definitely has a timestamp on it, and that is 2007.
Yeah. Yeah, it really it really does. But it's a good movie. Like, it is good, and
but
it's
enjoyable. It is fun. It's very fun. I mean, we spent hours, like, singing the songs. We had the soundtrack, I think, both of us. And we would spend, like, hours just, like, singing, being different parts, like, singing the songs, reenacting the scenes. Embarrassing, considering that we were both in high school, I think, at this point. But, like, we would do it.
We definitely have to mention the fact that this was another thing that we forced our family to watch us perform at
multiple times,
places, groups of people. We were like, oh, group of people? Great. You want to see us do
reenact Sweeney Todd, a horrifying musical for you all during this delightful barbecue?
I literally, like, remember being in the backyard of my house on Gainsboro and, like, we were having a picnic or like whatever it was, and you and I were like, time for this.
And now your entertainment for the evening, some morbid art about eating people.
No, I really distinctly remember doing that song a lot. The What, I don't know if
we got pretty good at it, I have to say.
We could have entered a talent show.
maybe one.
We were not that bad. For like high schoolers who like kind of didn't really know what they were doing and just had watched the movie a ton.
A million times.
Like we kind of had nailed it. What is that song where they've decided that they're going to bake people into pies and then.
Let me look up the track listing.
That one I remember we would do a lot.
A Little Priest.
A Little Priest. Thank you. I was like, it's one of the little priest people they're singing about. Oh, yeah. Can we talk about the Pretty Women?
I'm talking about things that don't hold up. But it's like supposed to give you skeevy vibes.
I know. I was like, I know this is supposed to be creepy,
but even if we're supposed to be creepy, this is pretty creepy.
Yeah. That. And like I said, too, like the Joanna song is pretty creepy, like especially when it's the duet between like him and Sweeney Todd, where Sweeney Todd is also talking about his daughter.
Yeah.
He's like, are you going to look just like your mom? Are you going to be virtuous like her? And I'm like, can you calm down?
Yeah. Can we stop mentioning the fact that she's virtuous? Like, let the girl bone.
Let her bone. Literally, let her bone.
Let her bone. She clearly wants to bone. She made eyes with somebody outside of a window and threw him a key. Like, yeah, okay, get in here.
Literally. She was like, I am horny as fuck.
I'm horny as fuck, and not for the guy that's been holding me captive for my whole life, who I know. Like, first, he, like, at one point, he takes a painting off the wall and has, like, a little peek hole that he can see her through.
Oh, yeah. Multiple times this is introduced.
And, like, she didn't see the peephole. She knew the peephole was there. She had to. It's just a hole in her wall.
I guess. Yeah, I forget what they, like, how they set dressed it, but I thought it was like disguised by something.
I mean, it's got a painting over it. And then he takes the painting away and it's a hole in the wall.
No. Like on her side, on her
wall. Oh, maybe it was. Maybe it was hidden, but still, I feel like if you're stuck in a room, there's no way she hasn't examined every inch of that room and found like the fucking hole in the wall.
No, she sits by the window every day.
That's the only place she sits, okay? With her birds that won't sing.
According to the movie, it is, because she's there every damn time we see her.
Yeah, that's true. She's like at the window and then at the insane asylum, and that's it. That's where she goes.
Pretty much. And then at the barbershop where all her worst nightmares come true.
Oh my God. Just like this poor traumatized woman. Like she's going to become her mother. Just like wandering the street being like evil. There's evil smoke.
Yeah. My other question is, like, who was Mrs. Lovett in all of this? Like, who was she? Was she just, like, a friend of the family type of deal?
I mean, I think she was the landlord, probably. She, like, owned the thing, the emporium of pies, pie emporium.
So she's always had that pie shop?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, like, she seems to have known.
Yeah.
Seems to have known them. So I'm assuming that she is like the owner of that property and like was their landlord.
Okay.
Basically.
Maybe.
Her husband owned it and then her husband is dead.
Right. Know? Okay. And yeah. Like, cause like she's always been in love with him and that's why she like does this and lies about the mom and everything.
Lies about it. But she doesn't ever lie.
Yeah.
She says she took poison and she's gone. She never says she's dead. So
she does plausible deniability. Technically tell the truth. Mrs. Lovett did nothing wrong.
Yeah, Mrs. Lovett never did anything wrong. She's a perfect human being.
I have to say, like, she is, like, a crazy bitch. But, like, she's the one you sympathize with when you watch the movie. Like,
I don't know. I sympathize with Toby.
Well, yeah.
Shop boy that has to kill Sweeney Todd in the end.
Yeah. Well, obviously, like, he's a sympathetic character. But, like,
yeah.
Out of the main characters, I was like, Mrs. Lovett is the one that you, like, really feel for. Like, she just, even at the end, I was like, yeah, well, you didn't lie, technically.
Technically, she didn't lie. Technically not. I mean, but she's also, like, not. I think the thing that I love about, and think the thing that I connected to about this, this show is that, like, Mrs. Lovett is not a good person. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she's not a good person. She is, like, a main character, and she's somebody that you sympathize with, much like Sweeney Todd. But, like, rarely are women... And she dies at the end, so it's, like, there's problematic aspects of that, you know what I mean? But, like...
No, but everybody... But rarely... Like I said, the morals of the
yeah
dictate the,
everyone dies.
That she would die. Yes, yeah.
Rarely are women allowed to be
cuckoo
bad, mm-hmm. just bad, and you know, like bad people. Yeah. You know, like we're or have sympathy and have you sympathize with them.
Yeah,
it's like it's so rare that you get like a meaty role like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I wanted to be Mrs. Lovett so badly. I also really wanted to be Sweeney Todd. I think I would make a great Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. Just putting that out there for anyone who would like to gender bend and cast me as Sweeney Todd. I think I could do it. I think I'd be great.
I think you should play Sweeney Todd. I'll play Anthony.
Great. Yes. Perfect. We're casting just gonna do so far.
An all. Should we? Just gender blind.
Yeah, gender blind. Let's make Sweeney Todd kind of gay, you know? Like, let's just make it kind of gay.
Like I said, Anthony and Joanna's story is already definitely lesbian coded.
For sure. We can call it Queenie Todd.
Oh my God.
Cut that out. I hate that. Cut it out.
Well, now I have to keep it in. You know that. No, I was thinking that. Watching this, I had like the very similar thoughts. I was like, this is a great role for like a woman mm-hmm. in theater, like to play this like extremely,
especially it's like an older woman.
Yes, like to play this extremely nuanced. Like she has moments where she's maternal towards Toby. She is literally killing people. She has moments where she's heartbroken, where she's grieving, where she's just a little bit cuckoo. Like she just, it's a very complex role, and I did really appreciate that because, you know, the other female characters are kind of reduced to their
virtues,
hair color. Yeah. So they're just talking about how they have yellow hair a lot.
Yeah. And they keep their legs squeezed tight.
I mean,
listen. That's it. That's all you need.
That's all you need in life. As a woman.
As a woman.
But no, I totally agree with you. Like Mrs. Lovett is she's a great character. And like I said, Helena Bonham Carter, she's just committed to playing these batshit insane women, and I love her for it. I literally love her for it.
Do you know who played Mrs. Lovett on Broadway?
Who?
I believe it was Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in the OG role.
Damn, I would kill to see that.
Me
that
too.
Sounds so good.
Yeah.
She probably killed it. Probably amazing.
I've listened to cast recordings. She does a great job.
Well, love that journey for her.
I think this story is based off an urban legend, too. Like an actual urban legend mm-hmm. about a barber who would, like... Because there was, like, a time in this around this time in London when, like, meat was expensive because
yes.
it was just not available. And so, like, there were, of course, urban legends about, like, cats disappearing into pies mm-hmm. and like people murdering somebody and putting them in a pie. You know what I mean? Like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
Those kinds of urban legends, I mean, pop up all the time. Who knows if it's true, but
they pop up all the time.
They pop up all the time. So do you think that this has a longer term had any effect on like culture?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Cause I feel like everything we've said before this, no. Like hints,
yeah, I don't think
hints
so either.
To no. I do feel like this had an effect at the time. Long term, mm-hmm. not so sure, but like definitely at the time of like where emo culture was and where Tim Burton as a creator was, like this definitely like made a splash and made an impact on that culture.
Yeah.
It's just that the trend died out as trends do, and like we were just saying, like this is just very of that time. So,
yeah, I mean, like Johnny Depp is kind of not a person that we like anymore in society either.
Yes.
For good reason.
Yes. Well, he was also really popular at this time. So like this was a
very
popular.
He was my favorite actor for a long mm-hmm. time.
No, understandably, he's very good. And he had some iconic fucking roles, especially around this time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that I mean, that also like contributed to it, like the iconicness of Johnny Depp at the time. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it really like had an impact short term, but I don't know about long term.
Yeah.
Did it make emos get into musicals? Maybe. I feel like they were kind of already into that, but I don't know. Maybe it did.
Yeah, this really did pull a subset of people into musicals, I think.
Yeah.
People who weren't going to be into, like, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or, like...
like, oh, there's musicals that aren't about just falling in love. Like...
yeah, like, the people who fell in with Sweeney Todd then found, like, Three Penny Opera and You're in Town. And right. They were like, oh, this is my...
right.
This is what I love.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
I like this aesthetic.
Maybe it like birthed a whole new like little emo kids who like got into this movie and then they were like, I like musicals. And like maybe now they're doing theater. That could have happened.
I think a lot
of emo kids were already into theater, but because of the crossover of culture.
For sure.
But, you know, who knows what kind of impact this, because I think this. It was pretty popular at the time, right? Just like Tim Burton plus Johnny Depp plus all that alone, like I feel like made this a hit at the time. So this isn't one of our more obscure ones. Like this was a moment.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see, I want to see what the box office was.
Oh yeah.
So it was domestic. It was 52 million. And then international was like 100 million.
I'm sure it was still considered a hit.
Yeah, the opening was $9 million on December 21st, 2007.
Really? So. It came out then? Okay, interesting.
Well, it was a Christmas movie, you know. It was like one of those like big blockbuster around Christmas releases.
Right, yeah. Feel good for the whole family, so. Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm. Great for the whole family. Bring them all. Kids that are way too young to
grandma
be seeing that.
Who's now scandalized.
Yeah, grandma who hated it.
Grandma who was like, I've seen
grandma
bloodier.
Who loved it. Yeah, grandma who loved it. Grandma who watches the Saw movies to relax, you know?
Grandma who was like, oh, that was an enjoyable 2 hours. That was a relaxing 2 hours. The grandmas. But yeah,
it was pretty popular, I would say.
Yeah. So those are kind of my thoughts on its impact. I don't think that. Like I said, I just think it is the moment of 2007, and that's okay. And we can appreciate it for that. And it's a great fucking adaptation of a play, like of a musical, a stage musical. So good for Sondheim for like rejecting offers to do it until this came along, because I think Tim Burton absolutely did it justice for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And whoever wrote the screenplay version did a good job adapting this to the film. Like this, it worked really well.
Yeah, when I say Tim Burton, I mean like and his team.
Yeah,
because and obviously
yes.
it was
not. And the Tim Burton coalition.
So I guess that brings us to our final. Some may say our best
and most important.
Do we still dig this?
This one's difficult for me. I was thinking about it. I was just like, I feel like this one is kind of my first no, you know, like, but also, yes, I don't know. Like, it's just like not my vibe anymore.
Yes.
And I don't think it's bad, but I just don't know if I feel compelled to watch it again.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly how I felt. But like, did I have a great time watching it? Like, yeah. Definitely. It's a good movie. It's a good movie, and I can super appreciate it for that. But like, I don't necessarily. I'm not gonna be like, oh, you know what we should watch?
Yeah,
Sweeney
Todd. Let's watch Sweeney Todd. Let's do that. Yeah, no.
That being said, I would be interested in a Guillermo del Toro remake of it. I think that would be really very interesting. And I do think that this is a play that you could maybe in 10 years or something, like there's going to be some other really cool horror or horror adjacent director that might do a remake of this. Like, I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
Because this one was so of its time. Like, I would definitely be open to seeing a remake. Like, this is not a movie that I'm like, no, don't touch it. It's a clap. Like, no, let's do a remake.
Why not? With maybe people who can like sing in like the pivotal characters. crazy thought, crazy idea.
Yeah. I can appreciate it for what it is, but
not really.
Do I still dig it?
Not really. Not entirely.
Not really Yeah.
Yeah. I love when Sacha Baron Cohen pops up in musicals, though. He's very good.
He's a good time. Mm-hmm. He's really a good time.
He's very talented.
He's extremely talented. I mean, he's a fucking opera singer.
He's pretty great.
Yeah, and his inclusion in this movie is also great because he really is this, like, everybody else is like, rrr, 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 no. And then he's just there like, I'm playing the loudest character you could possibly.
Yeah, imagine. No, he's great. He's great in that role. It's like, he's just like his outfit too. He's just like pretending to be Italian. It's great. Yeah. It's good. It's a good time.
Yeah, his Italian accent, I was like, there's a little bit of like, my wife.
Yeah, my wife. Like,
you can hear it a little.
There was a little bit of my wife in there. Yeah, I want to bring this memory up before we come to a close, though.
Sure.
I remember us singing Little Priest in the rain in your backyard once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like just, it was raining and we just like sang Little Priest, the duet. No one was around us. Just us singing in the rain. And it was, I think, the most emo that I've ever been in my life.
I don't remember that, but, like, that absolutely tracks. Because aside from the fact that we would put on performances for our family all the time, we also used to just, like, do it, like, by ourselves, like, just, like, for fun. And it was fun. And I do not... I'm not embarrassed.
No, I'm not embarrassed. I refuse to be embarrassed.
That sounds dope that we did that.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone had caught that performance, they were lucky, you know?
They were lucky. My neighbors just like looking out like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah. What was your neighbor's name? Nina?
Nina, my old ass Italian grandmother neighbor. Yeah.
Just like looking
just
out.
Just her like...
What are they doing?
Crazy American kid.
Well, she's hanging sausages in her basement.
Yeah, she did used to. She was the Mrs. Lovett of our neighborhood. Yeah.
But nicer.
She was the best. She was a real one.
I feel like, you know, we've said everything we could say about Sweeney Todd.
Yeah,
the demon barber of Fleet Street. I think that Toby becomes the Jack the Ripper in the future because he's deeply traumatized and now he hates women because Mrs. Lovett betrayed him.
Oh, really? I think that he killed him because of her.
I think he killed him because of her for sure, but also like she locked him in the basement with like...
Yeah, she did do that, I guess.
Like very clearly was going to kill him. And so she, after he was like, I would give my life for you, very deeply betrayed him. I think he might grow up to hate women. I don't know.
Well, it also is like 1800s England. So that's just a given.
Yeah.
That you hate women. Oh, man. And what has changed, I ask?
What has changed? That's a good question.
Anyway, I enjoyed revisiting this with you, as always.
Same, same. And I love you, and I miss your face, and I'll see you soon.
You will see you soon.
I will. It's a threat. All right.
So ominous. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a G-Squared production with your hosts, Georgia Gove and Grace Wilbur. You can find us on all the social medias at StillDigThisPod. Our producer is Irem Dogan-Kali. And our music is Banana Snacks by Demon Garden. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.